Stay tuned for one of the most unusual and fascinating hours you'll ever hear. The subject is UFOs. Welcome to the Paranet UFO Continuum, a one-hour program dedicated to a very strange phenomena, unidentified flying objects. Whether or not you believe UFOs exist, the controversy is real, and this program will try to get to the bottom of it. Your host is Michael Corbin, Director of Paranet Information Services, a global communications network based near Denver, Colorado, dedicated to the investigation of UFOs. We invite you to keep an open mind as we discuss one of the most fascinating and strange subjects in the world. Here's your host, Michael Corbin.
Good evening. Tonight we're going to talk about alien abductions. But first we're going to do a little bit of news. This program keeps growing across the country. Tonight we want to welcome those of you in northern Arizona listening to us live on KVNA AM 600 in Flagstaff. That includes people in communities like Sedona, Cottonwood, Williams, and Winslow. There's been a lot of UFO activity in Arizona, and we welcome your calls tonight at 1-800-UFO-2009. That's 1-800-836-2009. False memory syndrome, a diagnosis that you no doubt are going to hear much more about, is becoming the hot topic among ufologists around the world. Do abduction reports represent a real physical event, a spiritual event, or are they attributable to false memory syndrome? Well, according to an article in the June 5th Denver Post, Daniel Goleman reports that, quote, in a scientific nod to the frailty of memory, neurologists and cognitive scientists are coming to a consensus on the mental mechanisms that can foster false memories, end quote. The leading candidate of false memory syndromes is source amnesia, the inability of a person to recall the origin of the memory of a given event. Once the source of a memory is forgotten, scientists say, people can confuse an event that was only imagined or suggested with a true one. The result is a memory that, though false, carries the feeling of authenticity. Recently, a California court awarded $500,000 to the father of a woman who had accused him of sexual abuse after supposedly recovering memories of childhood incidents during therapy. Goleman continues, patients with damage to the specific zones of the frontal lobes are prone to confabulate or concoct stories to make sense of the shards of memory they retrieve and are unable to evaluate the reasonableness of their fabrications. The conclusions of scientists at Harvard call into question the methods not only of many therapists who specialize in helping patients retrieve memories of childhood sexual abuse, but also those commonly used by officials investigating such charges. The scientists say these methods can inadvertently plant a false memory and are based on naive or distorted assumptions about how memory works. I say this study is very interesting, but can it account for all or part of the abduction reports that we continue to hear about? I personally doubt it, but more important is that this article calls into question the methods used by hypnotherapists to retrieve memories of alien abductions. If this becomes de facto science, and I suspect that it could, we could be sent back to the drawing board to review how we research abductions. We'll keep you posted on the story as it develops. Okay, now on the subject of the strange and weird. October 18, 1973, at approximately 11 p.m., a helicopter of the U.S. Army Reserve was en route from Columbus, Ohio to Cleveland, Ohio. 7 miles east-southeast of the Mansfield, Ohio airport, at 100 feet above the ground, the crew encountered an unidentified lighted object. Analysis of the witness testimony indicated that there was an uninterrupted observational time of approximately 300 seconds. During this time, radio communications were interrupted, instrument and control irregularities were noted, and the aircraft experienced a climb of approximately 1,800 feet for which the pilot disclaims responsibility. This event was also witnessed by a family of five on the ground, and they saw a large object with a red and green light on it approach the helicopter. It stopped, beamed a green light which appeared to have form at the helicopter and caused it to experience the climb of 1,800 feet, despite the attempt by Captain Coyne to take the helicopter into a dive to avoid a collision. Now, you might ask, why are we bringing up a case that is over 20 years old? Well, it's because of a reported interest that the Pentagon had in an aspect of this case that has never been discussed before. And the interest was this. Lieutenant Captain Coyne, was contacted by a person who identified himself as being from the Department of the Army Surgeon General's Office, which is attached to the Pentagon. Coyne says he does not remember the caller's name, rank, or where to contact him, but the caller said he was in the field of metaphysics and specifically asked Coyne or any of the other crew members if they had had any unusual dreams since the UFO experience. As Coyne reported, he did indeed have two unusual dreams, the first one which he believed occurred like 2 or 3 days after the event, but he described it as follows. I'm going to read it. It's a quote. He was sleeping peacefully, and I got up and walked into the hallway and stopped. And I turned around, I saw myself lying in bed. I was laying on my side, sleeping. It was like looking into a mirror, you know. I dreamed that I was conscious, but that my body was sleeping. I got up, I dreamed I was getting up, and I started walking, and I turned around, and I was scared. I saw something laying in bed, and it was me. And at this point, he laughs uneasily. This, by the way, is being taken off of a tape of an interview with him. And he got so scared that I lay back down again, and I said, I better do this again. You know, am I seeing something? Am I hallucinating? And I laid back down, and then I woke up. When I lay back down, it was like sinking into something. The other dream, which was very vivid, and I talked to my wife for a week about this, was a voice said, the answer is in the circle. A very clear voice. I don't know whose voice it was. It was a strong voice, a voice you have respect for, very sure. It said, the answer is in the circle. And I was holding a clear sphere in my hand, a round sphere, a bluish-white sphere. This dream happened about two days later, after the first dream, and suddenly I started getting a little ridiculous. And I told my wife about it, and she said, you're becoming a little absurd, you know. Okay, that's the end of the quote from Captain Coyne. It was reported that another occupant of the helicopter, by the name of Healy, had had a similar out-of-body experience. And the reason I bring this up is because I wanted to point out that we notice the date of the incident is 1973. This is several years following the official closure of Project Blue Book. Now, due to the nature of the questions by the Pentagon official, it appears that they are curious about certain aspects of the event, namely dreams and possible body separation. Could we conclude that this particular data point of the experience is very important and appears in their or whoever is looking at this officially reports consistently? Further, does it validate the hypothesis that there is an ongoing official group studying the UFO phenomena? The other point I want to bring up is that the Pentagon person makes reference that he is in the field of metaphysics. With all of the recent discussion that we've had on Paranet, on our computer network, about SciTech and the involvement that they've had in some psychotronics research, remote viewing, some other real esoteric technologies, we wonder, you know, if this person might have been attached to a similar unit that is currently at this time and day investigating such esoteric technologies. And finally, can a conclusion be drawn from this which indicates the true nature of the phenomena and how it appears to interact with the human being? Although the conclusion is a strong word, perhaps we could postulate that insiders have some strong evidence that there is a phenomena that does include psychic or spiritual features, and this could lend a strong indication of where they are looking for answers. So I just want to bring that up because in a future edition of this program, we're going to investigate the spiritual aspect of it. Okay, when we come back, we're going to introduce our guest. You're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum. I'm Michael Corbin. We'll be right back.
The Paranet UFO Continuum is pleased to offer a number of exciting products. Now available are cassette tapes of previous shows, available for $8 each, or 2 for $12, or 4 for $20. You can also order MyCap and Paranet BBS memberships, subscriptions to Continuum, Paranet's quarterly newsletter, as well as the UT1 UFO Tracker Kit, containing everything you need when you come across something unusual in the sky. Paranet and MyCap are also proud to offer a stunning black t-shirt with a background of galaxies, stars, and comets and the Paranet and MyCap logos, as well as a beautiful blue-green planet Earth. When you order from Paranet, you're also helping to keep this program on the air. So call now. To place an order or for more information, call 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-836-6381. Paranet, your window on the universe. At 1-800-836-6381.
This is Fred Hayes. In 1970, I was a lunar module pilot for Apollo 13. During that mission, an onboard explosion caused us to abort our lunar landing. Our safe return home involved many workarounds. It underlined how important the human element is to space exploration. The space station is America's next step in manned space flight. If we're not careful, however, that important program could be canceled. $7 will be returned for every dollar spent on the effort. That's quite an important investment for the future and to provide knowledge essential to the future of spaceship Earth. Some experts say that without the space station, we will have no manned space program. That would be a tragedy for our nation and a retreat from the progressive achievements of the past three decades. For information on how you can support the space station, call 1-800-84-SPACE. That's 1-800-84-SPACE.
You're listening to one of the most unusual programs you'll ever hear. It's the Paranet UFO Continuum, and it deals with one of the most fascinating subjects around. Once again, here's your host, the director of Paranet Information Services, Michael Corbin.
And we continue. 1-800-UFO-2009. That's 1-800-836-2009. And our lines are open. My guest tonight is a very interesting person. His name is John Salter, Jr. John is up in North Dakota, and he is the past full professor and chair of Indian Studies at the University of North Dakota. Now, John, in 1988, then was 54, and his son, 23, had an extremely complex and friendly Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind experience. Emergent recall placing that 1988 episode in perspective triggered an awareness of three previous and friendly CE4 experiences in the writer's life. At ages 7, 18, and 23. It is clear that these specific events substantially enhanced and increased his sensitivity to social justice concerns at critical points. Now, CE4 is a Close Encounter of the Fourth Kind that involves abduction. And without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and bring John on. Good evening, John.
Yeah, good to be here.
Yes, glad to have you. Really glad to have you. John, let's cover. We're going to cover a lot of different aspects tonight because I know you've been a very active, advocate in the education and information area of getting people up to speed on what's going on with this phenomena. Let's start off by just giving a little background on what experience that you had.
Okay, let me make a couple of preliminary statements first. We don't see these visitors as being angels, devils, psychic manifestations, or time travelers, but we do see them as friendly extraterrestrial people who are interacting with us cautiously, but in a long-term sensitizing fashion with respect to developing our awareness. And secondly,
our awareness of what, John?
Well, our awareness of the nearby presence of friendly ET life and the fact that ultimately we'll be coming together with these people in congenial and mutually productive intercourse, though not necessarily in the immediate near future. Remember, we are a very volatile people in a very sanguinary, that is, bloody planetary context at this point. But in other words, we see the ETs as friendly, but understandably cautious. The second point, I think, is that no one in my family, including myself, had any conscious interest in the UFO situation until the spring of 1988. We weren't disbelievers, but we weren't really believers either. Pressed to the wall, we would have said that we feel that there is something to this, that there are too many reputable people, you know, giving thoughtful reports, sightings, experiences, and things of this sort. But we had absolutely no conscious interest in this. No one can point to one iota of conscious interest anywhere in the Salter family.
Now you're referring to your son and yourself, correct?
That's right.
Okay.
And my, you know, immediate and extended family.
Okay.
But on the morning of March 20th, 1988, my then 23-year-old son and I set off for Mississippi and New Orleans, where I had a number of speaking engagements.
Okay.
And we were diverted in a gentle but persistent and extremely effective fashion into a remote and obscure section of southwestern Wisconsin. A series of missing time episodes, which began near La Crosse late in the afternoon of Sunday, March 20th, 1988, culminated in a long 90-minute missing time episode near Richland Center, Wisconsin, at night.
Okay, now how are you directed? You said gently but persistently directed.
I can't hear you, Mike. You're fading.
Okay, you said a minute ago you were gently but persistently directed. How did that take place?
Well, I think the best way to explain that would be to say that the Salters are all straight-line drivers, fastest distance between A and Z.
Okay.
We're not tourist people. I grew up in northern Arizona. I'm a native of Flagstaff. There are more national monuments around there than probably any other part of the United States.
And your method is just to hit the highway and get...
That's right.
Yeah.
Keep going. We've got big bladders, you know, and we don't like to stop for anything.
Okay.
Okay, so in this particular situation, it made good sense to go from Grand Forks, North Dakota, to Minneapolis and St. Paul, and then right down to Cedar Rapids in Iowa City, pick up the interstate and go into eastern Iowa, where we planned to spend the night.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, for reasons that make no sense, several days before our departure, I decided that we would go through southwestern Wisconsin. It made no sense at all. We had no interest in the area at that point.
Okay.
Never been there.
Okay.
My son raised no objections to this. And at several points on the departure day, March 20th, I appeared to recognize that this made no sense. And then, in a persistent kind of a way, we found ourselves drawn on, you know, into that obscure and out-of-the-way direction.
Okay.
Missing time episodes began at La Crosse. There was a substantial one from La Crosse to the Richland Center setting, at which we became even further diverted into this rugged, isolated Mississippi River hill country near Richland Center, all of this new country for us. The amnesia, the gently induced double amnesia, faded. At one point, we were able to recognize certain landmarks or see certain landmarks, which, you know, we later recognized, later, you know, came back to.
Mm-hmm.
And then the amnesia closed in again at about 6:25 p.m., and when we came out of it, it was pretty close to 8 o'clock, about 10 minutes of 8, something like that. Almost 90 minutes had passed, and as it turned out, we learned later, we were in the immediate area into which we had passed into that 90-minute segment. This is awfully complicated, and it's hard to summarize, you know, at this point.
Well, let's go to what type of an impact it had on you.
Okay, but let me just quickly carry it through. Somewhat somnambulistic and groggy, we came out of this then. It was dark. We didn't know where we were, and we eventually wound up in eastern Iowa, but vastly later than we had planned to get there.
Uh-huh.
The next day, east of Peoria, Illinois, shortly after 10 a.m. and in full consciousness, a UFO appeared unto us, coming to a point about 200 yards above and in front of our pickup, hovered there briefly, and then took off at a fast rate, to the southwest. At that point, my son and I had several simultaneous perceptions. One was that we saw this as a appearance for our sake and ours alone. Secondly, we saw it as extremely friendly. And thirdly, we recognized that in some way it explained the heretofore inexplicable events of the preceding evening.
Okay. John, let's pick this up on the other side of the break. We've got to take a quick one here.
Okay.
1-800-UFO-2009, 1-800-836-2009. My guest tonight is John Salter, and he is talking about his abduction experience in 1988. When we get back from the break, we'll pick it up and hear what kind of an impact it had on him. This is Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum. We'll be right back.
Get the latest UFO news delivered right to your door with Continuum, the official quarterly publication of Paranet Information Services. Continuum offers a serious look at the world of ufology through hard news reports and interesting and provocative interviews with leading ufologists and investigators. There's a source and resource section to help you locate information on UFOs, plus much, much more. Each issue is also packed with information from the Paranet Information Services International Communications Network. So be informed with this comprehensive publication. Subscribe now and receive 5 issues for the price of 4. Send check or money order for $18 to Continuum, Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. That's Continuum, Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. Do it now.
Pilots, when you fly, you need convenient, accurate information for safe flight and landing operations, as well as local businesses that can provide you with the services and treatment you deserve. The Skyway Publications Airport Directory and Entertainment Guides are what you need. These free pocket-sized guides give you information you need about large and small airports all over the country. Information like radio channels, runway systems, coordinates, and taxiways, as well as fuel and aircraft services provided at the airport, along with local businesses catering to private pilots. It's yours free. Ask the fixed space operator at your favorite stops to carry the Skyway Airport Directory and Entertainment Guides, or call area 303-669-1800. That's 303-669-1800. Skyway Publications, your ticket to safer, cheaper, and more convenient flight. Again, talk to the FBO at your favorite destinations or call Skyway Publications at 303-669-1800.
You're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum. Whether or not you believe in UFOs, there's a lot about the subject you haven't heard. Stay tuned. Keep an open mind. Call in and join the discussion. Once again, here's your host, Michael Corbin.
1-800-UFO-2009. That's 1-800-836-2009. My guest tonight is John Salter. And John, let's go ahead and pick up where we left off before the break.
Okay, very quickly, Mike, what happened is this. We did not need hypnosis. In 3 months, Vivid linear recall began in my situation, which proceeded for many months in an orderly linear fashion. And in due course, orderly linear recall began in the case of my son, John III, who by this time had moved to California.
Mm-hmm.
In our respective recalls, which mesh with and complement that of each other, the story is essentially this. Very close to the small town of Richland Center in deepening twilight, we were diverted off Highway 14 onto a very narrow, rough stretch of road which is known as the Pier Spring Road. It runs for about a mile, rugged, rough, isolated. In the upper end, which is lonely, we came to a stop. We were approached by six or seven small humanoid ET people, four and a half feet tall, large heads, conspicuous eyes, thin limbs, and a taller figure who we feel is half ET and half human. We felt no fear at all. We're glad to see these people and went with them about 100 yards off the road to a small landed spacecraft in which certain medical things were done to both my son and myself. There was some friendly, very friendly periods of conversation. In fact, the whole atmosphere was quite pleasant. No fear, no tension, very pleasant indeed. And then accompanied by the tall figure, we then returned to our pickup and sat there long enough to watch the UFO depart. My son watched it from his window. And then we left on the Pier Spring Road, connected with another, and immediately returned to Highway 14. In this roughly 90-minute time span, we were probably no more than, half a mile from any given point. We just sort of went around, in a short circle. That's what it amounted to.
Now, John, the taller humanoid. What gave you the indication that you might be half human or half ET?
Well, for one thing, I'm one half American Indian and half Scottish, so I'm quite familiar with racial mixtures.
Mm-hmm.
He would be about 6 feet tall. Proportionately heavier than the others. If you looked at him from one angle, he looked human. And if you looked at him from another angle, he looked ET. In other words, this blended.
Okay.
The others had no hair. He had a scraggle.
Okay.
His eyes weren't quite as pronouncedly conspicuous as, say, the smaller people. On the other hand, he was not the person in charge of this mission. One of the smaller people was definitely in charge. The taller figure was there to act, I believe, as a go-between between ourselves and the others.
What type of communication took place?
Telepathic.
Okay.
And there's no question about that. Both my son and I have many recollections of situations where, in our mind, we were formulating questions and getting ready to express those, in a human, oral kind of way.
Sure.
And then into our mind came the response even before we had audibly uttered, the question.
Mm-hmm.
So that part of it's extremely clear. In fact, it's all very clear.
Mm-hmm.
In the wake of this, I should add, I've had about 24 positive physiological changes, all of which began after this, all of which are still continuing.
And these are positive changes?
Very positive, good. And my son has had several.
Okay.
All positive, all still continuing.
Okay. Before you mention a couple of those, I want to ask you a question, though, that's on my mind here. What, as you're aware, there are a lot of the abduction accounts that are out there, and a lot of them are, in some ways, like Bud Hopkins, for example, makes mention of the fact that they're very negative experiences. How does yours differ being a positive experience, how does yours differ from another abduction account where it was perceived by the person as negative?
Well, I think there are several factors here. One, I should add that we've heard from quite a few people, many people, several hundred people in the last several years since our case became well publicized. Virtually everybody from whom we've heard sees this as positive, as friendly.
Okay.
And I think the quickest way I can respond to the other is that I think there are some UFO researchers, you know, who are definitely into the gloom and doom thing, whether they want to come out and admit it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's very possible, given that kind of context, to impose a gloom-doom perception, you know, on somebody. Now, remember, in our case, we had no hypnosis
right.
at all.
Okay.
We didn't need hypnosis. It came, you know, in a spontaneous fashion. It took a while to come, but it came. And with all due respect to, you know, to Bud Hopkins, you know, who I know, and several others in that particular, you know, group, I definitely don't share their perspective at all, and I know a vast number of other people who don't. I think that it's very possible to take the initial perceptions of some people, you know, when this meeting is beginning, and in a hypnotic, you know, kind of context, focus, you know, on the, you know, on the surprise that many people would have, you know, when this starts to take shape, and never move past that into the positive dimensions of the experience.
Now, let me ask you real quick, John. At the beginning of the hour tonight, I read an article about false memory syndrome. I don't know if you heard it or not, but for you, as a percipient, for you, what tells you in your what tells you that this was an actual experience rather than, say, maybe even an implanted or a screen memory, like some people suggest that this stuff is?
Well, hell, we know that this was an experience. For one thing, it would have to be an experience to divert the straight line traveling scalders into that remote area.
Sure.
Okay, secondly, we know friendly people when we see them.
Okay.
You know, thirdly, the spaceship itself, which we saw, you know, on the outside only in a rather difficult way because it was at night, but the inside was certainly, you know, clear enough.
Uh-huh.
And we saw it up close in full broad daylight and full consciousness next morning east of Peoria.
All right.
All of this could not have been more real. Certainly the physiological changes are real.
Okay.
But let me go on to something else here. In the wake of this, as you pointed out when you were introducing me, three previous encounters surfaced.
Okay. Now, John, we're going to have to take another break.
Okay.
When we come back from the break, we'll talk about that. And I also want to talk about the positive physiological changes that you have mentioned, because I think that kind of fits in with, you know, the evidence for you that something did occur.
Okay.
The lines are open at 1-800-UFO-2009, 1-800-836-2009. And our guest tonight is John Salter. We'll be right back after this break. This is Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum. We'll be right back.
The Paranet UFO Continuum is pleased to offer a number of exciting products. Now available are cassette tapes of previous shows, available for $8 each, or two for $12, or four for $20. You can also order MyCap and Paranet BBS memberships, subscriptions to Continuum, Paranet's quarterly newsletter, as well as the UT1 UFO Tracker Kit, containing everything you need when you come across something unusual in the sky. Paranet and MyCap are also proud to offer a stunning black t-shirt with a background of galaxies, stars, and comets, and the Paranet and MyCap logos, as well as a beautiful blue-green planet Earth. When you order from Paranet, you're also helping to keep this program on the air. So call now. To place an order or for more information, call 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-836-6381. Paranet, your window on the universe, at 1-800-836-6381.
An increase in immigration to the United States.
A report issued today states that newly arrived immigrants.
It seems like every day there's another news story about refugees or immigrants. But beyond the headlines, there are things about immigration that you as an employer need to know. People who are already in the United States, who already have a legal right to work in this country, are being discriminated against by employers who don't know the law. Did you know that in almost all cases it is illegal to require U.S. citizenship? And it is also illegal to demand to see specific documents, like a green card, or not accept other papers that can prove a right to work. Take time to learn the law. It's easy, and it can save your business from facing severe penalties. Call the Office of Special Counsel at 1-800-255-8155, 1-800-255-8155. And next time you do any hiring, look at the facts, not at the faces.
Are UFOs for real, or are they just fiction? To find out, stay with us for more of the Paranet UFO Continuum with your host, Michael Corbin.
And we continue. Our guest is John Salter, 1-800-UFO-2009, 1-800-836-2009. We're particularly interested in hearing from you folks in Arizona tonight. John is a previous resident of Arizona, and you might want to give him a call and ask him about his experience. John, let's continue with the subject that we left when we took our break about the physiological changes that occurred to you.
Okay. First, let me quickly say that three previous encounters did surface.
Okay.
And it's clear that in the first, when I was seven, that I was scared. But I wasn't scared when I was 18, not scared when I was 23, and glad to see these people, very glad to see them in 1988. As far as we know, this was my son's first close encounter. He took his cues from me.
Okay.
The physiological changes began several weeks after we came back from the trip south in 1988. Here are some. Very fast fingernail growth. In other words, instead of clipping my fingernails every 3 or 3.5 weeks, I clip them now regularly every Sunday afternoon.
Okay.
My eyebrows, very sparse, now much, much heavier. Wrinkles have faded from my face. I've lost weight. Muscles have tightened up. I'm in much better shape than I was, you know, some years ago.
So it's almost like the aging process is reversing.
Very much. I've grown 1/3 of an inch, which somebody at my age does not do. Circulation is vastly improved. Cuts clot immediately, heal up very, very quickly. I mean, forthwith.
That's incredible.
I have had no colds or flu since 1988, which is extraordinary for someone who's living really only a few miles under the Canadian border in the worst weather zone.
North Dakota,
this is heavy stuff.
Uh-huh.
Those are just some of the things. My son's health has been, excellent. I should add that he had stopped growing when he was about 18. And at that point, he was 5'10". After this 1988 episode, my son, John, has grown over an inch and a half.
Wow.
So he's much taller than he was.
John,
health is excellent.
Maybe you should give us the phone number, how we can contact these guys.
Well, I'd like to arrange a meeting. All I can think is, suggest is think positive thoughts.
Yeah.
I should add that anyone who wants to contact me for further information on any of this should feel very free to call me or to write me at my home, and I'll give the address before this program is over.
Okay, all right.
But those would be some of the things.
Okay.
You know, there have been quite a few. Obviously, we'd run to about 24 in my case.
Now, as you and I talked off air before the interview tonight, we had discussed recently your departure from the University of North Dakota. And can you give us a little bit of detail about that and what's happened with that?
Well, when we returned from the trip, you know, we knew that some extraordinarily strange things had happened. And initially, our decision was that we would talk only about the sighting east of Peoria, and we wouldn't mention, you know, the strange events, you know, the preceding evening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we're pretty open people, and so very quickly we began to talk about all of this. The response was quite positive, good. As far as grassroots people, you know, and students and so forth concerned, I have a reputation as being a very practical person. I'm trained as a sociologist.
Mm-hmm.
I have a long and honorable history and sensible, you know, social justice pursuits.
Sure.
You know, I've won awards for this, and I've written, you know, a book on the Mississippi Civil Rights Movement and things of this sort.
Your biography is very impressive.
Yeah, I'm also a, you know, an avid hunter, a sportsman, a life member of the NRA, and presently, I might add, I'm also a firearms dealer, hunting weapons, things of that sort. My son, you know, is a very practical guy. So people took us, frankly, very seriously. And initially, we didn't have much flack at all. The media tended to be very good, and for the most part have continued to be.
Mm-hmm.
Students have always been fine, and grassroots people. After a while, as you know, this all began to come into focus and so on, students asked me to teach a UFO course. So in the spring of 1990, we offered a course called UFOs, ETs, and Close Encounters as a honors course. Most people thought it would get only about 20 students. We had to cut the enrollment at 180 because we'd run out of space.
You had a strong response.
Yeah, so a very strong response. 180 students, 65 majors, heavy from the hard sciences and aerospace studies, which is big at UND. And the course then took, you know, started in the fall of 1990. It was soon after that that some faculty began to react in a very negative, frightened kind of way. Perhaps jealousy entered into it to some extent. Some administrators began to get uneasy. But it's worth pointing out that consistently, local people, townspeople have been fine. Open-minded liberals, no problem.
Uh-huh.
Conservatives, no problem. Catholics, Protestants, you know, Mormons, Jewish people, holders of tribal religions, you know, all sorts of people across racial, ethnic lines and so on, no sweat there. The students have been great. Most faculty have been fine. And many administrators have, but not all of the administrators and not all of the faculty. And frankly, each year it became more and more of a bitter struggle to offer the UFO course. As it turned out, I was able to teach it four times in a huge sense. And during that time period, 1990, you know, to the end of 1993, four large incarnations, each time about 180 students, 65 different majors, some graduate students, you know, and others, offered two mini versions of it. And then did it once as a statewide interactive TV course to various campuses around the state. So we did it many, many times, relatively speaking, but all kinds of flack. The course that started out as an honors course was an Indian studies course, wound up finally this last time as psychology 494. So it had different tents and different flags. But a hell of a great course. It took, however, almost all of my time and effort, you know, to fend off what I'd call often shadowy, frequently, you know, veiled attacks.
Mm-hmm. Nothing direct or no.
And all kinds of screwy things. I mean, this in the spring of 93 when the final, the next incarnation of the Course was going to should have been advertised. It wasn't advertised at all, in the University of North Dakota.
Just little things that seem to go wrong.
Yeah, and it still got, in the fall of 1993, 180 kits.
I can relate to that because a couple of years ago we were doing a series of lectures at the Colorado University at Boulder here in Colorado, and we were doing them at the planetarium, and we started having technical problems. A whole plethora of unusual events took place, and when we started to investigate it, we discovered that there was, like you say, shadowy people in the background who were telling key people to put an end to this.
Right.
And that's very interesting. We got to go to another break. When we come back, I want to hear your take on why are they here. 1-800-UFO-2009 is our number. 1-800-836-2009. My guest is John Salter. And this is Michael Corbin. You're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum. We'll be right back.
Get the latest UFO news delivered right to your door with Continuum, the official quarterly publication of Paranet Information Services. Continuum offers a serious look at the world of ufology through hard news reports and interesting and provocative interviews with leading ufologists and investigators. There's a source and resource section to help you locate information on UFOs, plus much, much more. Each issue is also packed with information from the Paranet Information Services International Communications Network. So be informed with this comprehensive publication. Subscribe now and receive 5 issues for the price of 4. Send check or money order for $18 to Continuum, Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. That's Continuum, Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. Do it now.
Pilots, when you fly, you need convenient, accurate information for safe flight and landing operations, as well as local businesses that can provide you with the services and treatment you deserve. The Skyway Publications Airport Directory and Entertainment Guides are what you need. These free pocket-sized guides give you information you need about large and small airports all over the country. Information like radio channels, runway systems, coordinates, and taxiways, as well as fuel and aircraft services provided at the airport, along with local businesses catering to private pilots. It's yours free. Ask the fixed space operator at your favorite stops to carry the Skyway Airport Directory and Entertainment Guides, or call area 303-669-1800. That's 303-669-1800. Skyway Publications, your ticket to safer, cheaper, and more convenient flight. Again, talk to the FBO at your favorite destinations or call Skyway Publications at 303-669-1800.
This is the Paranet UFO Continuum, a weekly program dedicated to the mysterious and fascinating world of UFOs. If you're interested in learning more about Paranet, the world's foremost communications network dealing with the UFO phenomena, call us at area 303-429-2654 or write to Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. Once again, here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And we continue with our guest, John Salter. 1-800-UFO-2009, 1-800-836-2009. John, we got a couple more minutes to wrap this up for the end of the hour.
But let me go very quickly.
Okay.
First, we see this as a long-term sensitizing program designed to acquaint members of the human race with the nearby presence of friendly extraterrestrial life and the fact that ultimately we'll be interacting congenially and productively with them. We do recognize that the ETs have every reason to be cautious in their interaction with planet Earth, given the rather volatile nature of our people and our planet at this point. Number two, if I were summing up my view of this, it would be no intelligent life is alien to me.
Okay.
And I would encourage people, if they wished, to contact me. My address is 307 North 49th Street. That's 307 North 49th Street, Grand Forks, North Dakota, 58203. 58203. I'm listed in the phone book. You know, if they need my number or address from that source.
Okay. One last question in about 15 seconds. Do you know where they're from?
I'm certain it's the Zeta Reticuli system.
Okay.
Absolutely certain of that.
Okay. Well, John, this has been a very interesting hour, and I want to thank you for appearing as our guest on the show tonight. And I want to thank you for being courageous and being able to continue doing what you're doing despite all the walls you seem to have come up against.
Well, we'll all keep fighting, and success will be ours in the long run.
Okay, we'll have you back soon and get a little bit more in depth, because there was a lot of questions that I didn't get to ask that I was wanting to ask you about this. Okay?
Delighted to have been with you.
Thank you, John. Good night.
Take care. Mm-hmm. Adios.
Bye-bye. Okay, that wraps it up for tonight. Join us next week on the Paranet UFO Continuum. Our guest is going to be Jerome Clark. Jerry is the editor of the International UFO Reporter, which is a publication of the Center for UFO Studies in Illinois. Jerry's a veteran investigator, and he has been around for quite some time, and he's got a lot of interesting things to talk about. You definitely won't want to miss him. And until next week, I'm Michael Corbin, and remember to keep your eyes on the skies. Good night.